Lots of towns and cities have war memorials, and some even have statues to commemorate military heroes. But Montrose must be the only place that has the statue of a dog taking pride of place. Before we left Montrose, Simon and I posed for a photo next to Bamse, the St. Bernard who was a member of the Norwegian Navy during the Second World War. Whether Simon was going for dignified strength or bemusement as he posed for his picture, I'm not quite sure, but somehow he managed both. Bamse was given a full military funeral when he died in Montrose in 1944, and the Norwegian military hold a commemorative ceremony for him every 10 years. Bamse belonged to one of the ship's commanders and served on a Norwegian minesweeper that was stationed in Montrose and Dundee during the war. One of his tasks, apart from keeping up morale on ship, was to round up the sailors and crew and escort them back to the ship when it was time to go back on duty. Apparently, Bamse would even get on the bus unaccompanied and head as far as Dundee to fetch the crew from their favourite pubs. What a glorious friend. Now I think of it, I can definitely see the likeness Simon was going for.
We're doing a tour of all the Scottish football grounds. So today we're just starting with Montrose today and then up to Cove Rangers next.
Cove Rangers, Aberdeen, Peterhead today.
Did Brecon yesterday.
Oh, you did Brecon yesterday?
Yeah.
Is that your club?
What?
Brecon.
No, Celtic.
Celtic, not Montrose.
No. Celtic.
And fair enough. Is that your house?
Yeah.
You live literally within four steps of Montrose Football Club.
Yeah. I used to play for them long ago.
Yeah?
1957. Didn't get many games. You know the reason?
Go on.
No substitutes.
Right, got you. So if you weren't in the first team, that was it?
Yeah. And they didn't have three goalkeepers and four centre forwards.
No.
And 10 midfields. Just 12, 13 players, and that was it.
What's your name then?
Nick Cowerson.
Ah, okay.
Now, another thing was, remember, this is 1958. No floodlights.
No.
And in the winter time, what was training? Running around the streets. That was all you did. There was never a board up telling you, this is the position, this is what you do. There was no coaches. You played football and you made up plans between yourself. Kind of, there was no 4-4-2 system or anything like that. Everybody was all over the place.
We're on a real schedule today because it's 100 miles up to Peterhead today, you know?
Yeah. Cove Rangers.
Aberdeen.
Peterhead.
And
you're not doing the Highland League?
No.
No,
just the Scottish League.
Then you'd be going to Peterhead and Elgin.
Then Inverness.
Inverness.
Ross County. And then we're done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
We've done another 12 days cycling before this. So we've done all the Edinburgh clubs and the Glasgow clubs, obviously.
And the Fife.
Fife, yep.
Wraith Rovers.
Yeah.
There's quite a few people do this, and they don't know where Wraith Rovers is. It's Kirkcaldy.
Yeah, of course.
Ross County is Dingwall.
Yeah,
that's right. You've got to do a lot of research before you can do this.
We have.
The
Tour de Corse heads towards its conclusion with Stage 13, the first of three long days that will take us to Dingwall. Setting out from our hotel in Montrose, our first stop is Lynx Park after less than a kilometre of riding. We then stick close to the coast, following National Cycle Route 1 to Aberdeen, via a coffee stop in Stonehaven and Cove Rangers Football Club. Then it's onwards to Peterhead. This is the longest stage of the entire tour, 128.5 kilometres and almost 1,250 metres of climbing. Fortunately, we have the wind at our backs all day. Unfortunately, my hopes of sampling a deep-fried Mars bar at the Karen Fish Bar in Stonehaven were dashed because the chip shop wasn't open when we arrived. The Karen claims to have invented this uniquely Scottish delicacy, which is exactly as it sounds, a Mars bar covered in batter and deep-fried until the outside is crisp and the inside is molten and gooey. Oh well, another day. whistling. That's jingle bells.
Well, getting there, aren't we?
Whistling jingle bells. It's not even the end of September.
Feeling upbeat.
Good, good. I'm feeling better now. Now we've broken the back of today's stage. 67.5 kilometres done. And that's over halfway.
More than over halfway, yeah. According to my Hammerhead data, we are a mere 55.3 kilometres from our destination.
How have you been getting on with the Hammerhead, actually? You've bought one since our last trip to Scotland in April. I'm convinced that it was the difference between us.
Well, I think it's working. And it's not. I'm not annoying you quite as much by not knowing the way as well, I think. I think that's a big factor.
It didn't annoy me that you didn't know the way. You didn't ask which way next, but not knowing the way, I don't know. I like knowing the way, I must admit. I think it's an advantage to know the way.
Yeah.
And I think back, I know a lot of the sort of homespun charm has gone out of adventure cycling because technology has made it so much easier. We are following the yellow arrows and the yellow line, and it's doing a lot of them. Well, it's doing all of the map reading for us. The map reading was done back at home when I plotted the routes. I don't know. I mean, it's making us more efficient, isn't it?
But I'm enjoying the way I've got my climbs set up more than the way you've got your climbs set up. For some reason, you can choose how many climbs, which gradient or sort of level of climbs you want to see. So I think I've gone just the toughies. So there's only 4 today, according to my Hammerhead.
And on mine, there's 8. But I've chosen to include the fourth category climbs, so to speak, because what I don't like is going up a drag that's quite climby and thinking, God, this doesn't even count as a climb. I like to have it the other way, go up something that's quite short and go, oh, that was a climb. Done. Ticked off.
Yeah, it's weird how you have sort of psychological battles with yourself and the Hammerhead.
Psychological battles with everything, Simon, really. I was convinced earlier that I was just going to be completely out of energy today. And I've been okay so far. A few pro tips from Lizzie Banks has just set me right. Just the no-nonsense approach from Lizzie Banks. Just if you think you're running out of energy, eat things with lots of energy in. Eat and drink things with energy in. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
It's the mornings, isn't it? It's the morning when you know you've got a big day ahead of you. You've just got to battle on through that little section. Get, like we were saying earlier, get sort of 20 or 30 kilometres under the belt. You start feeling better about things. But it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, we are doing this for fun. That's the other thing I keep trying to remind myself. I mean, I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? The weather is lovely, actually. I mean, compared to what it could have been today, I think there was forecast for a little bit of rain maybe later in the afternoon, but we've had a little bit of sunshine. The wind has been at our back, which, as we came out of Cove Rangers Football Club against the wind, did you notice, was a bit of a headwind. So we have had a tailwind helping us along, and hopefully that will continue on the way up to Peterhead. But I don't know, I've been thinking a lot about the restorative benefits of cycling, the kind of healing qualities of cycling. I suppose it's been a pretty challenging year all round, hasn't it? And when everything feels challenging, even enjoyable things start to feel like more of a challenge than perhaps they should do. And I think that's where I'm at the moment.
Well, we said from the outset that it wasn't a gimme, that you'd get round this, even on nice bikes and with a bit of help. It's quite an undertaking. It's a lot of kilometres.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, 600 in 6 days is roughly what we're doing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's enough. And yeah, I suppose I'm thinking back to April, and I mean, I still kind of shake my head at the fact that we set off just a few days after Richard had died. He died on the Monday, and we were riding on the Friday. And I look back at that now and think, how on earth did we do that? But I think there was a sort of emotional adrenaline going on at the time, just a need to do something, get away, get on the road, be moving, be occupied, perhaps. And I feel maybe like some of that emotional adrenaline has kind of run out. I just feel sort of worn, really. Not just that, I mean, a lot has gone on since Richard died as well. I mean, my own dad died in early June, and as podcast listeners will know, I came back from the Tour de France for his funeral, which was at the start of the middle week of the Tour de France. And as I travelled home after the stage to La Planche de Belfie, I was feeling a bit unwell and I had a bad feeling. And sure enough, when I got home, I tested positive for COVID. And people have said to me, oh, well, why didn't you just go to the funeral and sit at the back and keep out of the way? Well, I suppose that was an option. There wasn't anything actually preventing me from going other than the fact I felt terrible. And the fact that, my mum had just started chemotherapy. And so I didn't want to put her at risk. And also, after speaking to the celebrant who led the service, he made it pretty clear that it would be very poor form to go to a funeral knowing that I had COVID. I mean, it would have been, really. But it meant that I had to watch my dad's funeral on a laptop, which was, to say, less than ideal is an understatement. But Simon, I haven't really had the chance to thank you for reading my eulogy so brilliantly for me.
Well, it was an honour. It was an absolute honour, but very difficult. I mean, just heartbreaking that you couldn't be there, and yeah, I can't imagine how you were feeling having to sit there on the laptop at home. But yeah, you're making my bottom lip quiver here.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, you take for granted that there's something in human beings that we know our parents, you know, are going to pass away. We know, you know, and that's the fortunate way round. You know, when I think about it, I think about Richard's dad, and I think how awful that must be. That's not the way it's supposed to be, and so there's that sort of burning unfairness about that. You know, very difficult to avoid. We kind of all know on some level that these events are going to happen. And yet when it happens to you, you're so totally unprepared for it. I mean, your mum and dad passed away in pretty quick succession, didn't they?
Yeah.
Under a couple of years apart, 18 months apart. And, I mean, I thought I kind of empathised with that, and I, at the time, didn't, because I didn't know what a sort of shattering blow it is, really.
Yeah, shocking, isn't it? And you never quite get used to life without them. You're just used to them being around, and you just think things will carry on as they are forever, and big changes happen just really quickly, and it's, yeah, you just got to get, like you said, sometimes doing things and carrying on a little bit as normally as possible and trying to enjoy yourself and have these adventures with your friends and creating memories. I think it's important.
I mean, you've adopted your dad's sense of humour even more so, I'd say, in the last 18 months.
I have, yeah.
Deliberately so.
I think it might be, yeah, yeah.
Do you do it to annoy your children?
Yeah, they now call me basically Mr. Cringe. Dad, you're so cringe, which I think is a perfect homage to my dad, who had a wizard sense of humour. Yeah,
it's funny, isn't it? You go through those teenage years. I mean, your children are a bit younger than teenage years, but perhaps it all starts a bit earlier. I can sort of remember being embarrassed by, you know, I think everyone goes through a phase of feeling embarrassed by their parents, don't they? Sort of tragic, really, a tragic sort of teenage affliction, that, because nothing to be embarrassed about. And also, when I think about you know, my own daughter, the idea of her being embarrassed by me is, oh, it's quite, I'm going to try and be impossible to be embarrassed by.
Wow. I should probably stop trying to do the floss in front of them now. I do that. And I can imagine, as the child, that's probably pretty... Yeah. It's living up to my name, Mr. Cringe. I can't do it either. Can you do the floss?
No.
Really difficult.
No.
I've even tried to watch the YouTube.
No, don't do that. Oh, Mr. Cringe, don't do the floss. But, no, I do. I've been thinking about Dad quite a bit, really. The combination of cycling and football, it's inevitable, really. They're the two sort of great interests that he handed down. So, I'm not sure. I mean, he didn't have much of a fondness for Scottish football, I don't think. But he liked going to, you know, unusual football grounds here and there. We went on a few trips together. And, yeah.
We're up near Burnley now, aren't we?
We're getting close to Burnley, yeah. We'll be there the last morning. The start of the final stage will be from Burnley. But we'll get to that. We've got a fair few kilometres to do before we get to Burnley, Simon.
Okay.
What have we got? 55 today. What's that?
Think about tomorrow.
Well, we're going to have an honest talk about the weather forecast later.
You gave me that look yesterday about the forecast tomorrow. I haven't looked at, I still haven't looked.
See, this fascinates me. I check the weather forecast a couple of days in advance and allow it to kind of, you know, lodge in my mind, and you just don't.
Different characters, aren't we? This trip is really sort of showing it.
Is it magnifying those differences?
It is. But I think it's working all right together, you know. Silent when you need to be silent. Chatty when you need to be chatty.
Not been that chatty, have we, today?
No, but
picking up, though. The mood's picking up. I think seeing the little bit of artwork on the side of Aberdeen's Pittodrie Stadium here, soul, spirit, tradition. I like that a lot. In white block capitals with the Aberdeen Football Club badge. Love the badge. It's really of its time, isn't it? Sort of late 70s type. It's an A, which is actually a side-on shot of a goalpost and net with FC set within it. And then we're by the famous granite turnstiles. Granite, of course, being the local rock, the grey granite of Aberdeen Football Club Limited. And over the other side, where we posed for our photograph, a statue of Sir Alex Ferguson.
Very good likeness as well.
A very good likeness, yeah. And a sort of... Somebody that I know, Dave Brailsford, always looked up to Alex Ferguson's man management. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know.
He looks, but judging by the statue as well, he started the sort of trend of having your trousers quite low down on your waist.
You think Alex Ferguson started that trend? Or do you think that that was just a fashion in the early 80s and he was wearing them in a fashionable way?
I don't know, it just struck me when I saw the statue. He had a little, one of those little thin belts, and then, yeah.
Let's crack on, I think. The fashion segment, I don't think, going to catch on, is it?
No.
Simon Gill's fashion segment.
Stood here in our lycra.
Nothing wrong with lycra, Simon. Let's ride on. What are we going to do? What's our strategy? Get another, maybe another...
Tick off another 20.
Tick off another 20, okay. I'm not sure Simon's fashion fix will catch on. Besides, we have to head on up the coast because there's still a way to go. Morale, though, is high, and that may be because of the tailwind, which is making us feel suspiciously good at cycling.
The Scottish FA Cup fourth round. Brecon City 0, Dundee United 1. Clydebank against Burnian as a late kickoff. Dundee 1, Meadowbank Thistle 1. Hamilton Academical 1, Motherwell 2, Heart of Midlothian against Celtic, late kickoff.
Skidding to a halt there, Simon. Sorry, we had a bit of a detour there. We went off-road, some sort of farm track that turned into almost cobblestones, loose bricks, mud, sykes across the territory, realised we were going the wrong way, and now we've had the white roads of Aberdeenshire, a gravelly footpath that leads all the way up to this.
All shells, I think, if you look closely.
Is it?
I think so. Hmm. What'd you say? That's shells, isn't it?
We could invent a new niche version of off-road cycling, couldn't we?
Yeah. Good.
What do you reckon?
To the castle?
The ruins of Slane's castle, yeah. Dramatic, isn't it? Right on the cliff top here. Quite a dramatic drop down there, I think, to the sea.
Well, it reminds me of He-Man and Castle Grayskull in our childhood. Do you not think?
Well, it's funny, I'm not saying that He-Man isn't a sort of cultural great, but this castle is said to be the inspiration for Bram Stoker's Dracula. Bram Stoker, the Irish writer, apparently holidayed in Cruden Bay, very close by, which we came through on the way up to the castle. And standing here, looking imposing, gothic, I guess.
Really is, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. Dracula. Unlike Doctor Who and James Bond, Dracula, a real person, yeah?
Oh, Dad, you've been thinking about that, haven't you? That setup. Because of what I said earlier. That's that, isn't it? What did I say earlier?
What did you say earlier?
I said something stupid about Dracula that you rolled your eyes at. It's not real, is he?
Is Dracula not real? No. No. Have you read Dracula?
No.
No? Oh, it's a sort of teenage classic, really.
Not scary.
It is scary, yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
it's scary. It's the one Watership Down.
Watership Down isn't scary. That's a rite of passage, isn't it? Watership Down. When all the nice bunnies. Oh, no. I mean,
I want to see you in that sort of turret up there looking down at me.
I'm not sure you're allowed to do that. It's quite tumble down, isn't it? It is a ruin.
He's going in.
I think you can go in.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I think you can go in and have a look. But maybe keep your helmet on, just in case there's any falling rubble.
If today's going to be the day when it goes.
I mean, that would be just our luck, wouldn't it? Typical. We nearly didn't make it here. I was almost about to give up because I couldn't find my way in. You can see it on the horizon from miles around. We've come such a beautiful ride over from our mid-afternoon lunch stop, fueled up by a very cheddary cheese toasty, really strong strong cheese. It was making my sinuses go a bit, that. Yeah, oh, it's nice, good strong cheese. But we're nearly there now, nearly at Peterhead. It does feel a bit like the wind is picking up and the sky is enveloping us in greyness, but I think we'll get in without getting wet, fingers crossed.
We're 4 o'clock now. That's raining. It's just started to rain.
It has, hasn't it? Let's have a quick look around the castle.
On my jacket.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I've literally brought that on.
Did you say? What were you saying? Oh, my word.
It did say on the forecast, rain from 4 o'clock. Let's have a quick look around the castle, picture in front of the castle and go.
We're going to be stuck sleeping in the castle at this rate.
The Tour de Corse is sponsored by Super Sapiens. You can use Super Sapiens data to find out the foods that work best for you, when to fuel for optimum performance, and how to keep the dreaded bonk at bay. Real-time glucose data at your fingertips means no more guesswork on fueling.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, why? Why? Why?
I don't know. Why? I mean, just checking. Just checking in on you. You've had a sort of up and down day, so.
Well, a very up day. I started low and finished high.
Yeah, you were flying at the end there.
Well, I seem to be sixth in the all-time leaderboard on quite a long Strava segment, I noticed.
Your face, so pleased with himself. Yeah, and where was I? Go on.
I think I pushed you down to seventh.
4 seconds ahead, weren't you, on that bit?
Was 4 seconds ahead, yeah.
Annoying, isn't it?
Oh, no, not annoying, is it? It's great. I really enjoyed today's ride, actually. I was worried a bit. It's a long time since I've ridden 128 kilometres in a day, I think. I need to look back and see how... It's years since I've gone that far in a day. I just don't get the chance to do that sort of length of ride anymore.
Because it's quite a long period of a day, isn't it, to go get that far, particularly at our pace. So, yeah, when do you get the whole day to yourself kind of thing?
5 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We were out there.
Look how much of a chunk of Scotland, though, we've sort of covered there. I mean, red line.
It's a small chunk of Scotland, but it does look quite impressive on there, doesn't it? All the way up that coast.
Yeah.
Highlights of the day, Aberdeen. I love Pittodrie. Really want to go to a game there. And Slane's Castle, I thought, was terrific. If it hadn't started raining, I'd have stayed a bit longer.
I went up the Curly Tower.
Yeah, I didn't want to risk the Curly Tower.
Curly Tower in cleats was interesting, with the sort of holes out straight to sea as you were climbing up there. It was a bit...
The stone staircase, yeah, I didn't risk that in cleats. I didn't want to come a cropper. But here we are in Peterhead.
Nice biscuit. What was the nice biscuit we had?
The Empire Biscuit.
Empire Biscuit, I enjoyed that.
Recommended by Lizzie Banks.
Indeed, I think that was a good morale booster.
Let's describe an Empire Biscuit. Sort of two shortbread biscuits with a sort of cream in the middle, a sort of
no
sugar.
Jam in the
no, not it wasn't jam, was it? It was sort of almost like a sort of sugary paste.
Oh, my children's version had jam in the middle.
Oh, did it? You had the children's version, which was topped with icing and then sprinkles. I had the grown-ups version, which was topped with icing and a glacé cherry. Little neat biscuit, shortbready, nice crumbly pastry. Good.
Nice place, Stonehaven, as well. I enjoyed that.
It was nice, wasn't it? Only disappointment was that the Karen Fish Bar wasn't open for us to try a deep-fried Mars bar, so that we still have to try and get one of those in the next 2 days.
You think that's possible?
Yeah, I reckon so. I looked on all the menus of the fish and chip shops here in Peterhead and don't seem to be doing it, so we'll see. We'll have a look in when we get to Lossiemouth tomorrow and, maybe Inverness on Tuesday.
They probably prioritise their fish in Peterhead over the Mars bar.
You would think so, yeah. Huge, huge fishing industry.
They're not out here catching Mars bars. Let's see.
They're not, are they? No. Well, let's have a well-earned post-ride recovery ale.
Looks like they've got a drink that we discovered on one of our first legs as well.
Innis and Gunn, yeah.
It's good.
We'll have a couple of pints of Innis and Gunn, I think, then. Well done, Simon. We did
well
today.
Yeah, that could have been a difficult stage, because I think you're on a bit of adrenaline the first couple of days because it's new and exciting. Day four, I think, traditionally tricky in the Tour de Écosse.
And long one. And another long one tomorrow. And let's not even look at the forecast. It's funnily enough, since our conversation in Edinburgh about our different approaches to looking, you know, beyond the present, the forecast has improved, actually. Now, the 40-mile-an-hour winds that were forecast to last well into the day are now only forecast to last until 10 o'clock. So,
in summary, you spent all that time worrying over nothing. And I was in blissful ignorance, but...
You wouldn't have even known that that wind was forecast to last all day or well into the afternoon. No, exactly. A lesson learned for me there.
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes it works in your favour and sometimes not. The sort of brush everything under the carpet approach.
The blinkers on, ignoring reality approach.
Not always the best.
Is this what led you to ride 14 kilometres through a Norwegian tunnel that cyclists weren't permitted to ride through on your Norwegian ride? That kind of approach? Just ignoring reality until it was too late?
Yeah, probably.
We go again tomorrow.
We go again, as all football managers say when they've lost a couple of games in a row.
Yeah. I was woken in the middle of the night by the hotel's fire alarm, which went on for ages and was the result of one of the guests smoking in his room. It took me ages to get back to sleep, and before I knew it was morning. When I went in search of breakfast, the restaurant where we'd had dinner the night before was all locked up, and I found a flyer which said that breakfast would be served in the pub downstairs, which was sort of underneath the hotel. So I put on my jeans and a hoodie and went downstairs. I hoped that Simon wouldn't come down to breakfast in full lycra, but when he arrived, he was in bib shorts and base layer, white cycling socks and sliders, and he certainly stood out in a bar full of drinkers. It was only 8 o'clock in the morning, but there were people who had clearly been drinking through the night, or at least since the early hours. One man had to be helped into a taxi. The pub had been open all night, we think, largely for the fishermen and workers at the fish market. Someone asked us where we were from, and Simon said, England, rather apologetically. It could have been worse, they said. You could have said Norway. We didn't really have time to explore what this was all about, but it was presumably a tension related to the fishing rights. Peterhead is, after all, a huge part of the fishing industry, home to the largest fishing port in Europe. It was also the start of Stage 14, which would take us across country to Elgin, and we knew from the weather forecast we were in for a tough day. The wind was blowing in the wrong direction, and it was blowing pretty hard. Before we even set off, I decided that we'd cut the route slightly short, finishing at Elgin City Football Club instead of riding onto Lossiemouth. It would still mean 108 kilometres and more than 1,600 metres of climbing. A tough enough day without the wind, which we've been warned about, it has to be said.
You want to check the wind direction, and if you can, make sure you've got that.
This is Chris Taylor from Visit Scotland.
But you're going to pass through amazing big long white sandy beaches, epic skies, you know, more horizon than you might have seen for a wee while. You'll pass through a lot of historic Moray, chance to check out the sort of castles and history and heritage that Scotland's famous for, and of course you'll be going through whiskey country as well, so a perfect opportunity to stop in at one of our distilleries, have a wee tour, understand the heritage of history of whiskey, and perhaps have a wee dram to help you on your way.
What can you tell me about Cullen Skink? Because that's on my list of dishes that I really must make sure I get an authentic version of, because it's not just fish stew, is it?
Well, The best place to have Cullen Skink is, of course, in Cullen. There are all sorts of views about the best recipe. The last time I was in Cullen, I had a couple of variations. One with chili, which was phenomenal, and one with a little bit of Guinness in it, which was amazing. It's essentially a sort of creamy fish soup with a sort of mixture of fishes and herbs. Absolutely wonderful, just delicious, and perfect for refueling after a long day in the saddle.
Remember where you are. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Chris mentioned the Cullen Skink there, and I had a very nice dish of it before my main course in Peterhead last night. The main course itself was something I'd never heard of before.
So that's beef olives, Simon. I've got the bigger beef olives than you. Appropriate.
You've got bigger beef
I've got
olives,
much bigger beef olives. In a beef gravy with mash and peas. I'm sold. Beef strips wrapped around white pudding.
Well, like we were saying earlier, you could have this as a sort of mid-ride snack, I think. Have it handed out of the team car on the way through. A little bit of foil. But you've got all the things that will keep you going in there. It's basically porridge.
Porridge and beef.
Some protein.
Yeah, let's try it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What did you make of last night's dinner in Peterhead, Simon?
I enjoyed it. It was really, really good, actually. I wasn't expecting too much when we popped in. It was just like sort of pub fare, but we had a bit of a chat with the bar lady, and she pointed me towards the beef olives, which I didn't know what it was. until she explained.
No, you asked them for a recommendation, and she said, well, we don't normally recommend it to people who aren't from here, but the beef olives are really good. And I've never heard of beef olives. I didn't know what to expect. And so they explained what beef olives were, and it's basically beef wrapped around white pudding, which is oatmeal pudding, and served like a Sunday roast dinner with gravy, and we had mashed potatoes with it, didn't we, and some vegetables, and it was nice. It was delicious, actually.
Fuel for the fire. Perfect cyclist meal. If you could get one of them in a SIS gel, I think you would.
Beef olives flavoured gel. Yeah. It was, I suppose, the thing that perhaps you might be quite surprised by was the texture of the beef around the white pudding. The white pudding texture does take a little bit of getting used to. It's obviously oatmeal, so it's quite distinctive type of texture, isn't it? Quite claggy, I would say.
You've got to be careful with the brain as well to not really engage too much with what you're actually eating. Do you think that's a thing?
No, because it's just oatmeal. It's not awful.
Isn't it?
No.
Blood?
No, it's not blood. Absolutely not blood. That's black pudding. White pudding has no blood in it.
Is it not? But there's meat in it.
Well, I didn't really actually want to ask what was in it. I think there might be some kind of, you know, fat in it to bind it together. I don't know, suetty. Again, people who know what white pudding is, it's probably one of those things to just enjoy. The flavour is nice, but I mean, nobody really goes into detail about, you know, what's in sausages. If you said what's in a sausage, you'd be turned off quite quickly, wouldn't you, if you really knew what was in a sausage. So probably best not to actually know too much. All I know is that the beef round it was lovely and tender, the gravy was very rich, and it was kind of a really nice alternative to the kind of traditional beef Sunday roast dinner. Went down a treat.
It did. And with a little pint of Audrey Hepburn's finest as well, we were fueled back up, ready to move again.
And I'd had the Cullen skink beforehand as well as a starter. I was really quite full after dinner. Excellent soup. Rich, creamy smoked haddock soup, very much a speciality of that coast of Scotland. And well, we might get some more Cullen skink today because we're heading up to Lossiemouth, and well, that's right by the sea, so you would imagine it will be on the menu there as well. Looking forward to some more.
Delicious. I mean, you've got to sample the fish dishes when we're up on this coast. And we saw some of the chaps that have been out at sea over breakfast, didn't we? They clearly worked very hard.
They'd worked up a thirst, hadn't they? I think, is that what you were trying to say? Yes, indeed. Yes. Had they been out at sea, though, or had they just been working in, the fish, where the fish is landed and then processed, gutted, descaled, etc.? I mean, either way, tough work at unsociable hours. But the pubs stay open all night, so it's fine.
And your ancestors from Burnie were probably doing something very similar in past lives.
Well, not actually, but we'll come on to that.
I don't think there's any debate, Simon. It's too... I don't mind the cold, I don't mind the rain, but the wind is too dangerous. I haven't even got as deep rims as you, and I'm getting blown about.
I'm getting shuffled around, even just on the little bit, the 2K up to the football ground there. I was way off the pace because I was having to correct every little gust that was catching my fucking stupid wheels.
Well, they're very useful wheels, except when it's windy. I mean windy says... Oh, you're doing the wind test. That's not great. Not a great test for audio. The listeners are going to have to take your word for it that your bike is being blown as you lift it up by the top tube.
Those trees.
Yeah. I mean, Windy this morning said consistently sort of 20, 25 mile an hour winds with gusts of up to 38 miles an hour.
What did we decide was rideable? 20?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't feel rideable. It's because it wind's unpredictable, isn't it? You don't know when a gust's going to come, and we're on a main road. I'd be happier when we get onto the smaller roads, maybe.
Yeah. What do we do then? How do we get to the smaller roads?
Well, we need to make an application to the race director and chief commissaire, which is me, and apply for a shortening of the stage, apply the extreme weather protocol. You're going to have to just take my word for it.
Being seriously, it's better to be safe, isn't it? There's no point.
It's definitely like better to be safe.
A massive road like this with gusts and stupid wheels.
No, it's not... And we've seen Peterhead Football Club, and we got in there. The next ground is Elgin, and we'll just have to, I think, monitor it. Maybe just get off the main road that comes out of Peterhead, and then when we get into the countryside, assess it then. What do you reckon?
I think you're right. Yeah, let's do it.
What was that, Simon? It is still windy. It's unbelievable. So unpleasant.
Are we going to give it a quick go?
Yeah, we've cut out. Having visited Peterhead's Belmore Stadium, we got in the broom wagon and headed to Longside, cutting out a main road section and shortening our ride by about 10 kilometres before getting back on the road. It wasn't any less windy, but on the quieter roads it was much less dangerous. Sun's shining, sky is blue.
It's really blue now. What the hell? Where did that come from?
And tucked away in this little courtyard outside the Old Mart Cafe in Maud, it feels relatively calm, relatively still. But that bunting there is blowing about.
Humongously.
It is blowing about humongously, yeah, very good. Christian Prudhon would like that. It's been sketchy, I have to say. If I was at home just riding, I wouldn't be riding in this, I must admit.
No. I wouldn't either. No, I'll be tucked up. Well, I've enjoyed... We've had a little break. We've got a few kilometres under the belt. We had a nice coffee. I had a custard cream. Giant custard cream, may I add. Mm. I feel a bit more revitalised. And, yeah, like you said, sun's out now.
I don't mind the headwind so much. We just low gear and plod on as if you're on a long climb. That's fine. It's just that gusting wind is not pleasant. It's taking the handlebars. It means... having to concentrate a lot more than ordinarily would be the case. Feeling the front wheel twitch a little bit. You've got deep section rims here, Zip 404s.
Embarrassing.
For soft bike packing, they're the ideal wheel, aren't they?
They are what the soft bike packers recommend, actually. Yeah.
But in high wind conditions, not great. The problem is I'm gathering too much data. I've been looking at the BBC website, I've been looking at the Windy app. It does say that we're still experiencing the sort of 40 mile an hour winds here in Maud now, but 23 kilometres down the road at Turriff, it should be calmer. Still 19, 20 mile an hour winds, which is still blustery, isn't it? But not as precarious. So I think we've decided to break the ride down into chunks. Next stop, Turriff, see how we're going then, see what time it is, because we have lost a bit of time this morning. Just waiting for that wind to die down. I know we did a 9-10 kilometre stretch in the broom wagon. Technically means DNF today, I guess. Technically, according to the rules of the Tour de Corse, but...
Well, the race director can do one if he's DNFing me for that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was in the broom wagon as well, so I'd be a DNF as well. But yeah, we'll see how we go. See how we go. It's a shame because the roads themselves are absolutely lovely. Quiet, upsy-downsy, roundy, cornery, through the fields. Just sheep and cattle for company.
Yeah.
Blooming wind, the invisible enemy, isn't it? Well, yesterday it was the invisible friend, let's be honest. It blew us onto the leaderboard on Strava.
When I decided we were really good at cycling.
Yeah. But today it's turned against us.
can't get over 15 kilometres an hour.
Well,
it's
going
to take a while at that pace, isn't it?
It is going to take a while at that pace, but we have got most of the day to get to Elgin. We'll just see how it goes. We're, you know, I'm feeling pretty good, actually, considering when we haven't really got very far yet. But like I say, next chunk, tariff and assess, I think. Onwards.
Onwards. Let's do it.
From Annan to Aberdeen and beyond, Lionel and Simon's Tour de Course is fueled by science in sport. From tiramisu cake bakes to beta fuel to Rigo recovery drink, science in sport have everything you need before, during and after your ride. You can get 25% off at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25.
Well, thank you very much. We're off. We're going to be a few minutes. We'll be a couple more minutes before we're off. Well, 2:10, Simon. Time really has rattled on. It's been a very slow morning. 40 kilometres on the clock and over 2 hours of riding. It's just been that strong headwind all the way. We've had a lovely lunch. You had a jacket potato, I had a toasty, but we're going to have to hope that the wind eases up a little bit. Quite an eventful ride coming into Turriff here, wasn't it? Because well, we got separated. I wasn't really pushing on, but
well, I think the absolute moron's choice of adventure cycling setup that I've got is basically pushing me into bushes every 5 minutes at the moment.
So you've been easing off, taking it a bit easy.
Well,
just to stay better to be safe than sorry.
I'm having to make a lot of like teeny corrections all the time, and then you get a little gust, and then you're off. But there's a little window at the moment, so
yeah. The sun is actually out again. Looking at that Union flag over there, that's still blowing quite strongly away from us, which means headwind.
I got overtaken by a man on a BMX.
Impressive.
With a massive rucksack on. Looked like he was carrying bricks.
I went cross country, ended up on a farm track, came to a big puddly section, rode through some of it, and then there was just a huge, huge puddle that I couldn't see the bottom of. I could see the road I needed to be on. It was only about 150 metres away, but I wasn't confident enough to go through the huge puddle. Didn't want to damage my wheel or anything.
It's not very adventurous, is it?
It wasn't very adventurous, but fortunately the hammerhead got me out of trouble. I managed to find a little route back round onto the course, and yeah, we're still, I think, 65 kilometres from Elgin, which is where the commissaire has decided we're going to end the stage today at the football ground in Elgin. Let's get moving.
Let's do it, yeah. We've had a lovely lunch at Trafford's, though, named after Old Trafford.
Ah, yeah, football connection.
Yeah.
The lady who owns Trafford, a big Aberdeen fan by the sounds of it.
Yeah, well, an Alex Ferguson fan, mostly.
Alex Ferguson
really.
Fan, yeah. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And we're going to be waved off.
Oh, look.
Hey, have a picture.
We're having a picture taken.
Why are you stepping out?
Come on, John, get in.
Come on. Perfect.
Well, Simon and I are alone with our private thoughts at the moment. We've decided to ride at our own pace. I think Simon's deep section rims are causing him real trouble today. Bad wheel selection by his mechanic. Not that he has any spare wheels with him, but in the gusting winds, not sure it's the most enjoyable ride for him. It's borderline, as I've been saying, but we've split up. Or rather, we've just drifted apart on the road, and WhatsApp, we've got the location switched on WhatsApp, and currently Simon is about 5 kilometres behind me. So I'm putting a bit of time into him here. But it's coming up to 4 o'clock, and there's still a long way to go to Elgin City, which is where the chief commissaire has decided the stage will finish today. We're going to be pushing it a bit with the light, I think. It's been grey and overcast today, and we've been relatively lucky with the showers. We've got wet a couple of times, but the wind is just never... Oh, it's never relenting, unfortunately. Always against either a block headwind or a cross headwind. Very difficult riding conditions. You can hear it in the background, I'm sure. But yeah, haven't even reached the coast yet. And I'm assuming it's going to be even stronger up there. I'm heading up towards Bucky. And then once we get to Bucky, it should, in theory, be flattish, at least to Elgin City Football Club. Oh my goodness, not sure I've done many rides this hard, or rather, not sure I've done many rides this short and this hard. In terms of hours in the saddle, it's ticking up, approaching 4 hours of riding time, I think 3 hours 45, but barely 75 kilometres on the clock at the moment, and as I say, 30 still to go, so I'd better push on. Don't worry about Simon, he's got the broom wagon with him. He'll be alright, he'll make it. But I'm just keen now to get into the clubhouse, so to speak. Oh. Oh, here comes the rain again. Oh. Oh, well, made it to Elgin. A bonus little rain shower on the way into town, past the ruins of the cathedral. Now outside Borough Briggs, Elgin City's ground, watching Simon's progress, watching his dot move towards me here at the finish. He's still got 9.7 kilometres to go. Reports are that spirits are still high out on the road. Oh, spirits are high here because I've just demolished a Scotch egg. The perfect post-ride food for what was a tough day out, I have to say. 108 kilometres, 1600 metres of climbing, headwind or cross headwind all the way. Oh man. Barely bust 20 kilometres an hour average speed as a result. Yeah. Soggy now, quite cold. Do it all again tomorrow. But with the bonus knowledge of knowing that tomorrow is also the finish line, and a sense of satisfaction when we get to Dingwall. Have to say, notwithstanding the headwind, beautiful cycling. Beautiful cycling. When we popped out onto the coast at Bucky, well, the sea was grey and quite rough looking, but it was spectacular. And then the cycle route was largely cycle path on the way into Elgin, so didn't encounter any traffic at all. Past the golf course, past some early evening dog walkers, one couple with three dogs, none of them on a lead. They had to kind of wrestle them to the ground to stop them jumping up at me as I rolled past slowly. But yeah, the golfers out in this wind, tough to control the ball in 25 mile an hour winds. But as I say that, and typically, suddenly all is still outside. Maybe it's because we're relatively sheltered here, but it does feel like the rain has stopped and the wind has dropped to greet my arrival here in Elgin. Typical. Well, that was type 2 fun, wasn't it? Enjoyable?
Are we talking to Don King?
Yeah. Cold as well, isn't it now? We need to do what we need to do here quickly and get to the hotel and...
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know where John's gone. But we need to...
It's fucking you, son.
The camera's here. I mean, picture quickly.
Good little
view,
right there.
Is there?
Hammerhead's dead.
Oh, what, really? Run out of battery?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah, I'm really quite cold.
high.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, indeed. Tough day out, Simon.
It was a tough day, wasn't it?
Mm. My legs ache for the first time this week, really.
Yeah. Like, doing the test there?
Yeah.
The sort of old policeman.
Yeah.
Hello.
Wobble, the little wobble when you get the knee angle gets to, I don't know what angle that would be, maybe 60 degrees.
Not even 60 for
wobble.
Me.
Wobble.
Oh, 80.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I don't know if the recorder can pick up that noise, but that noise is flags on a flagpole flapping in the wind.
It's a lovely spot, this, though, isn't it? Lossiemouth. Lossy. I gather the locals call it. I think this is a golf course below us. I can't remember. It's dark now. When we arrived, it was dusky, wasn't it? Beautiful view out to sea. Absolutely stunning. Is this a golf course there? No.
It's got that look, hasn't it?
I could be wrong there. Was it further down the... It was further down the front, maybe. I don't know. I'm confused now.
A challenging golf course, I thought.
Befuddled. I saw some golfers on the way into Elgin. Two little fellas on the green, just on that cycle path. I thought, blimey. We're mad being out in this wind on bikes. Golfers, you've got to learn how to keep the ball below the wind up here, haven't you?
Guess so.
My technique of the low runner is would be very valuable up here.
What's your low runner?
Well, just a kind of scuffed, long, 150 yards bouncing along the ground on the golf course.
I thought you only used two clubs.
I do, yeah.
One of them's quite lofty, isn't it? You're a 7-iron specialist.
Yeah, but also my sort of default bad shot is a low runner.
Ah, okay.
Way back when. And so to Burnie, the start of our final stage, which would take us via Inverness to Dingwall, home of the final football club on our list, Ross County.
You know when you're in Burnie.
You reckon that there's going to be, well, it'd be a massive welcome to Burnie, friendliest town in Scotland.
100%, sign. Yeah. Like the sign that when you go into Las Vegas. Vegas? Vegas, baby. That's what they're saying.
Burnie, baby. Thank you for not driving like an arsehole in Burnie.
Once voted the happiest place in Scotland.
Oh, brilliant.
It's starting to look like we might have already just been through Burnie without even realising.
I think Burnie is not a town, is it? It's a hamlet at best.
It's a lifestyle, yeah.
I've got a feeling that...
We've missed Burnie.
That might...
No, we're not there yet.
No, we're not there yet. Yeah. No. You know
that is pre-Burnie.
Lower.
Welcome to Burnie, Simon. It's a privilege and a pleasure to welcome you to Burnie. I'm not sure I can lay claim to my ancestors actually owning Burnie or even necessarily coming from here, but we are in Burnie. This is Burnie. We saw the sign on the main road there. There's not a great deal here. The Glenlossie Distillery is just up there, so... plenty of whiskey in Burnie, but not an awful... It's a hamlet. It's a very small hamlet. But welcome.
We found a sign, didn't we, that had Burnie written on it. We've had a little picture of you by your sign, with your people, near your people, amongst the Burnies, the clan, the Kilts,
lots,
the tartan.
Lots of Burnies from Elgin. Lots of Burnies... over in Peterhead as well, and as I found out from my mum not that long ago, actually, my ancestors hail from this part of the world. My great-great-great-grandfather was born in Peterhead, and his son was born in Camp Curragh in Ireland, on the island of Ireland, but it was a British Army base. I've actually been thinking about this because I've known... Well, since I was a child, that my Mum's dad was from Ireland and came to England, and I didn't know that my dad's side of the family came from Scotland, and I certainly didn't know that my great-great-grandfather was born in an army camp, a British army camp on the island of Ireland, so part of the British army that was obviously not terribly popular in Ireland. And so I was thinking about this when we were cycling through Glasgow and the whole sectarian divide between the Catholics and the Protestants, you know, the Irish immigrants and the Scots, and realising that I'm a kind of a product of half and half almost.
You're a half and half Rangers Celtic scarf.
I'm not sure about that, but I suppose in footballing terms, I would always have identified more with Celtic than Rangers, and so it was a slight surprise to realise that ancestors on the other side were over in Ireland. I mean, let's not put too fine a point on it, as part of the oppressive British Army forces. So, it's interesting, isn't it, that these divides that really split communities, you know, they only exist, those divides, if people let them continue to exist, I guess.
And how much of a say would you have had about these things at the time? I mean,
well, I had no say, obviously. I had no say, Simon, in any of this. Here we are. The Frankenstein Club, in a nice way, Inverness Caledonian Thistle. Do you remember we met Alan Smart, former Watford hero?
Yep.
And he told us the story of Inverness Caledonian Thistle. Do you remember?
When we went for a bike ride with Alan.
We did go for a bike ride with Alan, didn't we? He was quite keen on cycling.
He was,
yeah. Wembley hero, Alan Smart, Scottish player. Scored at Wembley for Watford in 1999, one of my greatest days watching Watford. Alan Smart painted a picture of two divided sets of fans kind of cut and shut together. And he said that the players that had been on Caledonian weren't fully supported by the supporters of Inverness Thistle, and it was all a bit of an awkward marriage at the start, a kind of an arranged marriage where, you know, the extended families weren't too keen on the union, but they got it together, became Inverness Caledonian Thistle, and are responsible for one of the finest headlines in sports journalism, Simon, as you reminded me this morning.
Yeah, in The Sun, I believe. I couldn't tell you what year, but I do remember it. It was
in the 90s, wasn't it? John Barnes was the manager. Another Watford connection. Watford legend John Barnes. Celtic manager to not great success. They played a League Cup game against Inverness Caledonian Thistle and lost. And the headline was, Super Cali, go ballistic, Celtic are atrocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. So there we are. That's what I know about Inverness Caledonian Thistle. They play in a combination of the two original club's colours, red and blue.
I think maybe Watford and Luton could get together.
Oh,
don't even.
Oh, come off it. No. Football rivalries are a great thing. Sporting rivalries are a great thing. I'm trying to think of a cycling equivalent where teams have happily merged. Garmin and Cervelo merged together in the 2000s, 2010s.
Happily?
That's a long story, isn't it, I think. Depends who you speak to about that. But here we are.
Nice spot.
A nice spot. It's by the river. It's by the bridge. We can see the bridge. We can see the hill we've got to go over when we get over the bridge up to Dingwall and Ross County and the Champs-Élysées of our Tour de Corse, so to speak. So here we are. Yeah, we can see the finish line, really, can't we?
Over that hill,
yeah. Well, we'll reflect on that when we get to Ross County and Dingwall before our long journey home. But let's have a look round Inverness Caledonian Thistle Stadium, do our picture and get rolling.
You can charge up your whatever there, look. Just outside the stadium there.
A car charging point, yeah.
There's a player just coming out there. He looks like a big striker.
Just going in, isn't he? And maybe they're training there today. Who knows?
Bring it on home, Inverness Caledonian thistle. Bring it on home, give your all to the final whistle. Cali and the Jags in their red and blue. Cali and the Jags doing it just for you. My heart's been broken, many an angry word's been spoken. Families disunited, father and son on opposite sides. But after the tears and memories of those golden years, two teams into one, taking on the rest, proving they're the best. Always be a winner.
Let's give the last word to a young Scottish rider who did his country proud in the summer. Finn Crockett won a bronze medal for Scotland in the Commonwealth Games road race in Birmingham, and he's one of a number of young Scottish riders who are making waves. There's Anna Shackley from Mill Guy, who was impressed for SD Works in the World Tour. Cameron Mason from Linlithgow is developing into a very fine cyclocross and mountain bike rider. And Sean Flynn from Edinburgh has just signed for DSM, the first Scottish developed male rider to reach the World Tour.
Yeah, so what do you think of the Ross County shirt?
Finn Crockett is from a village not far from Dingwall, and so, naturally, he supports Ross County.
I mean, I see the kit online and on social media and stuff, but it's been a while since I've seen it in, well, yeah, with someone wearing it in front of me. So go on, I'm on the staggies.
I reckon it would make a really good cycling jersey.
Yeah, it looks a bit tight, no, around the...
Yeah, it's yeah, it's player
sporting
fitting,
fit, right? Sporting
fit. Yeah. Well, listen, four very simple questions for you, Finn, really. Sure. First up, I mean, tell me about your bit of Scotland, because you're from a, is it a village not far from Dingwall?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I'm from Strapeffer, so just along the valley road from Dingwall. So I went to school in Dingwall. I did my whole high school there. I've lived there, I grew up there, yeah, for about 20 years. And I live in Stirling, so I'm more in the central belt. And I think you did cycle through Stirling or close to Stirling on your tour. But yeah, it's where I grew up. It's an amazing place. I love going back. My parents are still there, so I'm back quite often. But yeah, I've just finished uni in Stirling, so I've been away for a wee while now.
You know, what was your journey into cycling? I mean, was the location part of the thing that got you outdoors?
Yeah, most definitely. So where I grew up, so Strapeffer, there is this annual cycling event. I don't know if you've ever come across it, called the Strapeffer, and it's a 24-hour mountain bike race. And for some reason, that was the thing that got me hooked on cycling, a 24-hour mountain bike race in January as well. So yeah, I think there's about 18 hours of darkness, 6 hours of light, and for some reason I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And yeah, it was obviously a really local event, like thousands of people kind of come to Strapeffer and around the area and do this crazy event. And yeah, when I was about 12, I kind of went to watch it a few times, probably a bit younger than 12, and then yeah, I started getting to mountain biking myself, and we had a great club called Square Wheels Cycle Club, which were based out of Strapeffer. And there was a lot of kind of guys similar age, a bit older than me, that cycled as well. And that was kind of my way into it. And I mountain biked and I raced mountain bikes for about 4 or 5 years, and then kind of moved onto the road after that. And that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment. So yeah, that was my way into it. But yeah, definitely location helps a lot. I mean, you're kind of, I mean, just out the back door, you're in the woods straight away. So, you know, you are kind of one with nature, really. And I always loved being outdoors when I was a kid. And mountain biking was the best thing to kind of get that freedom and get out of the house, really. It was great. And just with your mates, cycling along. There was a lot of crashing involved, but had a great time along the way.
Pick yourself up, dust yourself off. I mean, we rode from Gretna all the way through, you know, via every football club, and our last stop was Ross County. And it struck me, looking at the map, You know, there's an awful lot of Scotland still left after Dingwall, isn't there? I mean, do you kind of consider yourself the Highlands, or do you just think, no, actually, the North, we're the sort of south of the North?
Yeah, I mean, the Highlands is such a big area. I think it's the biggest region in the UK. So, yeah, I mean, it's huge. I definitely class myself as a Highlander. I think I'm very much in the midst of it. I mean, beyond where I live up north, there's not a huge amount a huge amount going on. So I'm in the more populated part. But I mean, it's a shame that you didn't get to go all the way up to Furze or Wick and along that west coast, because that's where the North Coast 500 goes. And honestly, it's some of the best cycling that you can do, especially on that west coast of Scotland. So yeah, I feel very lucky to call that my home. And growing up there was great. And I mean, I've traveled, I've done a lot of traveling, especially in the last kind of 2-3 years, closer to home, which I never really did beforehand. So yeah, I guess you get a whole new sense of appreciation with what's actually around you. It's an amazing part of the UK for sure.
Now tell me about the road cycling recently, because I mean, the Commonwealth Games was presumably the high point of your year. I mean, to get on the podium there. I was there. I was watching by the roadside with my family, actually.
Oh, cool.
Having got back from the Tour de France, and I mean, it was a absolute first time up that climb. It was bang, wasn't it? The everything
cool, yes,
kicked
yeah.
off. But it tell was, me yeah. how it broke down at the end, and just reel off the list of the names that you were up with at the at the pointy end.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the nature of the course, it was always going to be full gas, and the amount of world class riders that were there. I knew it was going to be a hard race, and I knew you had to be switched on tactically. I knew that there was going to be a move that went, and it was going to be all in to kind of get into that. And yeah, well, once I eventually got into the move with another Scottish boy, one of my teammates, Sean Flynn, we knew that once that gap had grown, that was going to be the winning move. And yeah, but coming into the last 50 kilometres, it was just attack after attack. We obviously had we had two riders. England, I think, had three or four. But we kind of, and then most of the other riders were kind of single. So we actually had a bit of an advantage and could kind of share the workload as Team Scotland with Sean. And yeah, like, do you know what? Like, it all just kind of played out. I knew if it came down to sprint, I fancy my chances of at least trying to get a medal. And so much happened in that last 30, 20K. It's hard to kind of run through everything that happened, but I knew I just had to be in the right position at the right time. And I knew, I remember when Garen Thomas kind of shot past with a K to go, England had the numbers. I was sat in fourth wheel. I was like, okay, this is maybe gonna, go my way. And yeah, I mean, the sprint was good. I actually was on, I mean, I say I wasn't on a great day, but I was there, when it kind of mattered. And yeah, to get a medal for Scotland, in the road race with so many professionals surrounding me, it was a pretty cool, it was very cool actually. I mean, yeah, it's not often I get to kind of compete against these world-class guys, and to kind of to show that I can be in the mix is awesome, not only for myself but yeah for riders of similar ability. So no, it was a really cool experience, and it's not often I get to pull on the Scottish jersey. So to get a medal is amazing. I mean, I've got it right next to me, watching it, and you can see I've got a bit of memorabilia above me as well. So no, it's been a really, really good year cycling wise. So yeah, I've come a long way since the strap offer, the 24-hour mountain bike race back home.
Yeah, tell me what is that jersey there behind you on the wall?
So that was the Rutland Cycle Classic from this year. So that was another big highlight in April. The British Classic, as they call it. So that was really good. Another big win.
a great race. I've been many times. Yeah, the you know, kind of the
the Paris-Roubaix of the Midlands, I guess.
Exactly.
So what next? Because, I mean, it feels like there's a bit of a groundswell behind Scottish cycling at the moment. Obviously, the World Championships next year, that's going to go all across, almost reach up to where you are, isn't it? Because the time trials will be Stirling, all across that central belt of Scotland and even down to Dumfries and Galloway. It's going to feel like Scotland's the centre of the cycling universe.
It is, yeah. I can't, and do you know what? The time trial goes past my flat, which is just crazy. So not that I'm ever going to have a chance to do the time trial, but I think that's super cool, having the World Championships, the biggest cycling event, really come past your flat of all places. So I think it's going to be an amazing year next year for Scotland, for cycling. Scotland is such an up-and-coming nation in cycling. There's guys across all disciplines, and girls, sorry, across all disciplines that are doing amazing things. So I think it's going to be a big celebration of cycling, and hopefully, it'll inspire the next kind of generation of Scottish cyclists. So I'm definitely looking forward to watching it. I'll be here supporting and trying to go to as many events as possible. Which will be quite easy in the time trial. I can just kind of look outside my flat. But I'm really looking forward to it. I would love to take part, but I think it might be a bit of an ask. But, you know, maybe in a couple of years' time.
It's going to play havoc with all the local Strava segments as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think it goes over Coral Road, which is, that's one of my training roads. So it goes over the back side of it, thankfully, not the important the side from Glasgow. So it comes over the Stirling side, which is going to be cool to see it. Roadside, and the roads that I train on pretty much every day. So,
And what about you personally? Because the team has kind of closed its doors. It's come to an end.
That's right. Yeah. So I was riding for River Wildside for cycling this year, and sadly. Mostly down to sponsorship, the team is folding for next year, which is a huge shame. I've had a really great year and met a lot of really good people through the team. So it was it was a bit of a difficult period. I was trying to work out where and what I was going to do, but I thankfully got a team sorted for next year, which is really exciting. So I look forward to kind of announcing that very soon. It'll involve a lot of racing and hopefully a lot of opportunity, which is really what I'm after.
Excellent. Yeah, this episode will go out next week, so it's probably too early to break the embargo on that, is it?
Yeah. I think December is when they're going to be kind of announcing names. But it'll be cool to. It's going to be an exciting year next year. That's what I can say for sure.
Did the medal, and the performances, I mean, obviously, must have helped in the search, because for any British rider, when a team closes, it's not like there's, a huge host of options sometimes. Historically, over the last, 20, 30 years, it's always been difficult. When a team goes, all those riders have to find something else, and it's not a given, is it?
No, for sure. And this year especially, I have a lot of teammates from Ribble that have struggled in finding a team. I mean, the UK, it's a shame. We've got some amazing talented riders. The racing's hard. And it's really hard to win in the UK, but it just doesn't get the same amount of appreciation as, in Belgium and Holland, where racing is just, it's so different. For British riders at the moment, trying to make that step up, and I feel even more for younger riders, coming out of junior, younger under 23s, it's finding that opportunity, and it's coming harder and harder to do that. So it's a shame. I'm always going to support the British scene. I know how hard it is. I've kind of struggled my way through it for the past 4 years, trying to win one of these races, and I eventually got there last season. But it's a shame, man. Hopefully over the next couple of years it can build up again. It's so hard when the racing season and the races that you need to race are in Europe, a lot of travel, a lot of costs is involved. So it is difficult for UK teams to compete against, you know, similar teams abroad on a scale of things. So, yeah, it's difficult. It is difficult.
And the Cycling Academy, I mean, is trying to bridge that gap as well, isn't it? I mean, trying to get people maybe, you know, if there are difficulties domestically, trying to sort of hopscotch almost to that European level and get people over to the continent and experience that competition sooner.
Exactly that. Yeah, the Cycling Academy is great. I mean, Jimmy, who I think you've spoken to, he's actually my coach. So I know Jimmy really well, and Peter, his family. So it's very close to home, the Cycling Academy, and it's great to see what they're doing. There's another team, the Spokes Racing team that I went through when I was a junior, and that again provided a lot of opportunity for riders like myself that didn't really have access to that. So we raced abroad, we raced in Belgium as juniors, and it's so important that we got these platforms that give younger riders the opportunity, even if it is just to experience it. I know you obviously want to go to races and win, but actually having that access is the most important thing. So what they're doing at the Cycling Academy is really, really great. I'm definitely all behind it.
And lastly, I've got to ask about Ross County. Do you get to many games? It's been a tough start to the season, but they're just having an upturn in form lately.
Yeah, well, they did actually win this year against, was it Hibs? I think they were playing. So on the up. I used to be a huge Ross County fan. I used to go to most of the games. I remember when Ross County won the Scottish Cup in 2016. I was at that match in Hampden. But now, not so much. I'm away from home. I don't get to Victoria Park. Yeah, that's the name of the stadium. I don't get there that often. But I still always like to stay updated with them. And if anyone asks me who I support, Ross County is my number one team. So there's none of that Celtic Rangers. It's Ross County.
And that's a wrap for the Tour de Cosse. Our journey from Gretna to Dingwall over 15 days of cycling took in every Scottish Football League ground. We covered more than 1,300 kilometres and spent almost 58 hours in the saddle. On the way, it felt like we saw a lot of Scotland, including all eight of the country's cities: Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen, Dundee, Inverness, Perth, Stirling, and the newest of them all, Dunfermline. And yet it feels like we've only just scratched the surface of this wonderful country. There's still so much more to see. The Highlands and the islands to the north, the Trossachs, Loch Lomond, Loch Ness, perhaps we'd even catch a glimpse of Nessie if we rode a full lap, the Cairngorms, Ben Nevis, the Bathgate Alps, and so much more. And that gives us a reason to go back, which I'd love to do in August 2023 for the World Championships. The track cycling will be held at the Sir Chris Hoy Velodrome, which is just over the way from Celtic Park, which used to have a cycle track of its own and in fact hosted the World Championships in 1897 and regularly attracted huge crowds for track cycling until 1913. 110 years later, the best riders in the world across all disciplines will gather in Scotland. But for now, and for the Tour de Cosse, that's the end of the road. I'd like to say a huge thank you to Simon Gill for being such brilliant company and for making the tour what it was. Thank you to everyone we met along the way, and especially to those who contributed their expertise to the series. To our sponsors, Super Sapiens, Science in Sport, MAP and Hammerhead, their support enabled us to set off on this crazy adventure in the first place. A huge thank you to Sam Slatter and John Hurd, who supported us in the broom wagon. We didn't carry our own luggage, but we still had to pedal all the way. Earlier in the series, I asked for suggestions for what this genre of soft cycling could be called, and Rick van der Gate on Twitter suggested bike slacking as opposed to bike packing. I quite like that, although we didn't slack off too much. Thank you to everyone who has listened to the series and sent us nice messages. And lastly, but by no means least, thank you to Tom Wally. Throughout this series, I've described Tom as our producer, but that is to underplay his enormous and creative contribution. His sound design has been exceptional, a work of art in itself. At times, this has been quite a personal journey for me, and my appreciation for the care Tom has put into every episode could not be greater. He's also quite modest, so I wouldn't be surprised if he cuts this out.
Scottish League Premier Division, Aberdeen 2, Kilmarnock 0. Celtic 5, Morton 1. Dundee United against Motherwell, evening kickoff at 7:30. Hibernian 0, Rangers 0. St Mirren 0, Dundee 0.
Here we are back in Hertfordshire, Simon. It's all over and you're in a boot. You've had a football-related injury, extraordinarily.
It's not that extraordinary, really. I've had it coming for many years. Avoided being kicked until my 46th chapter, and here we are. Got booted three Sundays ago, and, a fractured fibula, which is the supporting bone in your lower leg. And, clean break in a boot. 6 weeks or so in the boot, and then 3 months probably until I'm pedalling or running around again. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, what next? What do we do next? We need a purpose for 2023.
We do. I mean, I really enjoyed Scotland. It had its ups and downs, but on the whole, I don't think we fell out particularly, did we? I could have read the road book a little bit more. Would that be fair to say?
I mean, you did just check things with the race director quite a bit. You know, where are we going next? Is today the day we're doing this? I mean, it was fine. It's fine. At least I knew what we were doing most of the time.
You did. You did a really good job. I have to say, it was very well planned out.
I actually enjoyed the planning. A lot of the when we were out there, we avoided a lot of difficulties because it was pretty well planned, and we knew where we were going, and we knew what we were trying to achieve each day. But
it'd been much more fun trying to get over on that ferry though without £2.50.
You'd have got very wet. You'd have got very wet getting across. But I do think we're tough enough. I think that we've proved to ourselves, I mean, you certainly have proved to yourself that you can do proper bike packing. I think it's time to do something.
Absolutely, you have. No, you were good. You were stronger than me overall. You won the Tour de Corse. You were the... What colour did we decide the jersey was?
I don't know. I don't think we did decide. Well, I'll obviously make a jersey.
You were on the top milk crate at the end, I think.
We need to do the podium presentation here in the pub garden, don't we, afterwards. I'll go on the top milk crate as champion, and you can go on the smaller milk crate as runner-up in the two-man Tour de Corse. But we need to do something else, and I'm quite happy. I'd really like to do something a bit more self-supported. One idea I floated was the Italian football grounds. I mean, that would be amazing, wouldn't it? Basically, the Giro d'Italia, Giro di Calcio. Or I'd like to go and discover Ireland. I know you've done quite a bit of riding in Ireland, but something about Ireland in the early summer, that would be good.
The league is in the summer, isn't it?
Their league, the League of Ireland, is played through the summer months, yes. But have listeners had enough football? That's the big question. I mean, we don't really know that. We don't really know.
You do one of those Twitter polls, have you had enough football? I think you angled it beautifully right back round to cycling as much as you could, just not to alienate all those non-football types.
The thing is, there'd be some hugely contentious result, wouldn't there? 52% says yes, 48% says no, and then in six years' time, we'd still be arguing about whether or not we've had too much football or not. I suppose the only way to find out is to have a look at the map and see whether we could create a tour of Ireland visiting the football grounds, but experiencing the country. I could go and see where my grandfather was from.
He was from Burnie.
On the other side. Maybe I'll get the map out over Christmas and we'll have a beer, look at the map and see if it can be done.
Something's being conceived here, isn't it?
Right here in the Orford Arms, Hertfordshire, yes. Well, all that leaves me to say, Simon, is thank you very much for your good-natured company, your patience. You put up with the tyrannical race director barking orders at you and setting the agenda and telling you where to be and what to do. And it was a pleasure. It was a real pleasure. It was a great fun thing to do. And on the whole, well, we're talking about repeating it. So it's obviously something that I would repeat in a heartbeat.
We got through it, didn't we? We had a false start. We got going again. I think we sort of achieved, we definitely achieved something because we didn't give up. We persevered. There were some highs and lows, and that's what it's all about, adventure. Highs and lows, mates, cycling, bit of football.
That is it, isn't it? Life on the road. It takes you one way, it takes you the other, the highs and the lows, and we got to the destination and we're as good friends. We're probably better friends even than we were when we set out.
Yeah, yeah, let's go with that.
Ringing endorsement.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.